May it please the court, on behalf of Artavia Scott and Dorian Dalton, if I could reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, please. In this case, Mr. Scott was convicted of numerous offenses. He appeals only his conviction for credit card theft. It's our argument that the Court of Appeals erred by finding that credit card theft accomplished by taking, obtaining, or withholding a credit card is not a specific intent crime. The Court of Appeals held that in Meeks v. Commonwealth 274 v. 798-2007, this court abrogated previous cases which interpreted the credit card theft statute to require proof of the intent to use, sell, or transfer. The Court of Appeals further held that according to this court's holding in Meeks, the intent to use, sell, or transfer the credit card is not an element of the offense in this case. And Scott respectfully argues that to the extent that Meeks so held is wrongly decided by this court. Meeks was a venue case which determined when the crime is completed for the purpose of venue. And this court in Meeks stated, we hold that credit card theft is completed when the card or number is unlawfully taken from its rightful owner or is received with knowledge that it has been taken and with the intent to use it, sell it, or transfer it. Meeks did not explicitly overrule any prior case law as to the element of specific intent, and it does not clearly appear that it was this court's intention in Meeks to change existing case law on specific intent. It's a little bit difficult to say whether the language in Meeks is dicta or not, because it was part of the court's holding, but at the same time, the issue of specific intent was not before the court in Meeks. Prior to Meeks, the case law held that the with intent to language applied to both prongs of the statute. In Wilder v. Commonwealth in 1976, this court stated that with respect to the credit card theft statute, subsection A deals with the acts of taking a credit card, obtaining a credit card, withholding a credit card, and receiving a credit card, and that the foregoing prescribed acts must be accompanied by an intent to use the card or to sell it or to transfer it to a person other than the issuer or the cardholder. In Darnell v. Commonwealth, the court of, in 1991, the Court of Appeals held that credit card theft under Virginia Code 18.2192 requires the intent to use, sell, or transfer. In Scott v. Commonwealth, in 2001, the Court of Appeals held that under the first prong of the credit card theft statute, the taking of a credit card must be with the intent to use, sell, or transfer the card to another person other than the issuer or the cardholder. Additionally, the current model jury instruction for credit card theft in the guilt phase, 16.100, holds that or states that an element of credit card theft that the Commonwealth must prove beyond a reasonable doubt is that the taking, obtaining, withholding, or receiving was with the intent to use it, to sell it, or to transfer it to a person other than the issuer or the cardholder. It is our argument that credit card theft is a specific intent crime. Per the credit card theft statute under subsection 2, credit card theft or credit card number theft is grand larceny. Theft crimes, including larceny, are specific intent crimes. And although credit card theft has a different specific intent than other larceny crimes, that's only because credit cards lack intrinsic value. Since larceny and other theft crimes are specific intent crimes, interpreting the first prong of the credit card theft statute to require only a general unlawful intent, as the Court of Appeals held as based on its interpretation of Meeks, would lead to results contrary to law. A general unlawful intent under the credit card theft statute under subsection A would consist only of a lack of the cardholder's consent.
Counsel, I appreciate your recitation of the law, which was very good. I want to go back long before law school to elementary school, or what my grandmother, who was a grammar school teacher, called grammar school. Because my grandmother taught me to parse sentences, which I thought was unusually cruel.
You did?
Yes.
Cruel or cool?
Cruel.
Oh, okay.
Cruel.
Cruel.
Cruel. I can only tell you it was cruel. Now, I cannot look at subsection A and parse it because it has 10 ors and no periods. Or I can try to parse it, but it doesn't really work very well. So I then am going to look at, as you said, prongs. I'm going to look for the or that serves as a fulcrum. and with that divides it into two sides, two halves, or even more perhaps. I find that "or" after the word "cardholder's consent." So I have one prong that says he takes, obtains, or withholds a credit card or credit card number from the person, possession, custody, or control of another without the cardholder's consent. Or, and then the second prong becomes everything that follows that. That becomes the fulcrum. It divides the two. Now, I then try to figure out, when the General Assembly crafted this absolutely, this unusual sentence, can I figure out what it was they were trying to do? What was their intent? And it seems that you can figure that out, because the first prong is something that is done actively. You take, obtain, or withhold. The second prong is something that occurs passively. You receive it. So if I act, then the mere fact that I am the actor implies an intent. But if I receive something, then it's possible that I could have done it innocently. And if I receive something, I then need to, it then needs to be proven that I intended to use it or sell it, that it wasn't merely passively holding it, but that I was going to subsequently do something active with it. And that is a satisfying way of legally parsing this sentence. Where am I wrong?
I can't say that Your Honor's reading of the statute is wrong based on the way that it was written. I would suggest that it is poorly written.
The General Assembly can't poorly write something. They can unusually write something.
Unusually write. It is unusually written, and the lack of precision of the grammar does invite two interpretations of the statute. To read it as Your Honor just suggested it be read would make the first prong of subsection A inconsistent with part 2 of the statute, which states that credit card theft is grand larceny, given that grand larceny is a specific intent crime. And to read the language of "with intent to use or sell it or transfer it" as applying to only the, I guess, more passive, as Your Honor put it, way of obtaining the credit card, would make the first prong of subsection A a general intent crime.
Okay. I understand your explanation. Thank you.
If there are no other questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Aaron Campbell on behalf of the Commonwealth. I think Justice Mims hit on the issue, and that is, how do we interpret this, and I'll add, very unusual sentence in the statute. Basically, the threshold issue is, what type of intent does this credit card theft statute have under subsection A? And Justice Mims, I think you your analysis of it was correct. It's basically written in the disjunctive, and the fulcrum "or" is the one that comes after consent. The first part of that statute does not have the specific intent element. The second part does.
Can you have, respond if you will to your opposing counsel's response, which is you can't have a general intent prong if, in fact, it is grand larceny.
It is punished as grand larceny. It is not grand larceny. Grand larceny.
Well, again, then, the General Assembly had an unusual way of writing it, because it said it is grand larceny and is punishable as provided in the grand larceny statute. So,
I think that it's not larceny as a common law crime. As we know, larceny is a common law crime. It's a statutory crime. So I think you have to follow the plain meaning of the statute. follow the words of the statute as opposed to
okay.
To that sentence. The rules of grammar, the rule of last antecedent, as this court is well aware, is one way of interpreting this. The specific intent element, when you follow that rule, modifies the second part, not the first part. To Justice Mims, your point was what the point that I was going to make is that the first part does involve active verbs, taking, withholding, obtaining. These are all forms of taking something active, whereas the second part only talks about receiving, which is a passive, something passive. And that would make sense why the General Assembly had added that specific intent element to the second part, but not the first part. To the extent that prior case law interpreted that second part to apply to the first part, the specific element, the specific intent element would apply to the first part, we would say that Meeks did essentially overrule those prior case law. Even if it didn't, I think the court needs to read this under a plain meaning of the statute.
So you have one, you agree though that there's a prior decision of this court that construed the specific intent as applying to both.
Yeah, the Chatham case, which Meeks overruled explicitly in some respects, and then Wilds was the one that came
out. And then there's, not that the Model Jury Committee is in any way binding on this court, but they also, you would say, misread the statute.
Yes, Your Honor.
Doesn't that, if you have essentially two prior decisions of this court and whatever persuasive value we want to take from the Model Jury Committee, doesn't that point towards an ambiguity? And if there's an ambiguity, doesn't the tiebreaker of the rule of lenity then help the defendant out?
Well, I mean, the rule of lenity only applies when there is ambiguity, like you said. But the first rule of statutory construction you must apply is the plain meaning of the words. And I think the court should look at the plain meaning of the words itself and the rules of grammar before the court reaches the rule of lenity and applies that. And we would argue that certainly grammar can be overcome by context, but we would say in the context of this statute that the General Assembly did not mean to add those specific intent elements at the end of the second part to the first part. And we would say that a reasonable fact finder could find under the facts of this case that the defendant had the requisite intent to commit credit card theft when he took the victim's purse in this case. One more point on that point is that credit cards are typically found in wallets and purses, and a reasonable fact finder could infer that the defendant had the requisite intent. Unless the court has any questions.
All right, thank you very much. Rebuttal?
Just very briefly, I'm asking this court to overturn Meeks in part or to clarify Meeks as to whatever this court's ultimate ruling is on the issue of specific intent. Again, it's not explicit in Meeks that was this court's intention, and it could be that Meeks was just mirroring the unusual language of the statute and making its holding on venue. But either way, I think at this point it is unclear if it was this court's intention in Meeks to undo the specific intent element, that is what it has done, and I ask this court to clarify it, I think.
The court will be in recess until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
All rise.